We ready? All right, here we go. I've been practicing this intro now for probably 4 years. So I think I got it. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. What's up, everybody? This is Dr. Josh Yellen, pinch hitting for Jeremy Jackson on the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Today's guest is Dr. Eric Sowers. Dr. Sowers is a CATI commissioner and is also the founding department chair for interdisciplinary health studies at A.T. Still University, where he oversees the Master of Athletic Training Program and the Doctor of Athletic Training Program. Did I get all that right, Eric?
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. It's only taken me 4 years to think about it, and then, you know, I practiced it for the last week, so I feel like
good.
I got it. Before
good.
We get going, I just want to give a shout-out to my mom, Heidi Yellen, who is listening in sunny Southern California. She loves to listen to the broadcast, and she says that she always learns a lot, and I'm sure that I'll get a text message here soon that she'll send to me. She says, I love you, honey. I'm proud of you. And Mom, I love you, too, and I'm proud of you, too. All right.
Great job. That's a great intro there.
If I could take the mic off and drop it, I would.
Please don't.
But I don't want to mess with any of your stuff.
Yep. So if you want to join this conversation, the YouTube there, go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com and comment on the YouTube chat. And then this episode will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/DAT. As we're talking about the doctorate of athletic training, so the DAT, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/DAT. Without much further ado, we're going to get right to you, Dr. Eric Sowers. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on the DAT programs, how many there are, what's the goal, what do you hope that each of your doctorate of athletic training students comes up with?
Perfect. Well, first, thanks, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk a little bit about Doctor of Athletic Training Programs. Second, I just want to do a little disclaimer. Josh noted that I am a CATI commissioner, and the views and opinions expressed here are those of myself and not of the CATI commission. So don't hold them responsible for anything I say. They'll greatly appreciate that. So in terms of DAT programs right now, I believe there's only four. There's a couple places that are in the process of developing DAT programs, but I think that there's only four. I've not seen more than that, but it doesn't mean, you know, new programs come on board all the time, and I'm not necessarily constantly scouring the internet to find them. But I believe currently there's only four that are up and running and accepting students, and I believe that there's two in progress. So that's sort of the current landscape of how many exist at this time.
Eric, before you continue on, because I know that we have a list of questions for you, this is a hot topic. To my right is Melanie Kwok. Melanie is one of our second-year MAT students in the University of Houston. We'll be graduating in just about 5 weeks, and we'll be taking her boards
April the 5th.
So we have just a little bit longer to go.
Good luck.
So
thanks.
as we talk about the DAT programs, he said it with such confidence, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Like, good luck. and so I've noticed that different than entry-level professional programs, different than post-professional master's degree programs, the CATI accreditation of a doctoral program is not, it's not a necessity.
Right.
So can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because I think there's some confusion with the general community in terms of, or at least the people that I've talked to that are interested in going to a DAT program. Do I go to a CATI accredited DAT program? Tell us a little bit about the differences.
So right now there's only one DAT program that's chosen to pursue CATI accreditation, because it is, like all accreditation, it's voluntary, right? But at the professional level, it's a little less voluntary in that if you want to actually deliver an athletic training program that prepares students to sit for the BOC, you have to become CATI accredited currently. And so it's voluntary to be in that business, but if you want to be in that business, CATI accreditation is required. Versus in the post-professional space, the post-professional master's degrees and the post-professional doctoral degrees, it's completely voluntary. You can have a DAT program and not be accredited, versus you can't have a professional AT program and not be accredited. So it's really just a form of quality assurance that programs could voluntarily choose to pursue. The actual post-professional accreditation standards apply to both master's degrees and doctoral degrees, they were originally written for the master's degree programs, and they haven't had really a significant update to apply to the DAT programs, which is probably one reason that DAT programs haven't pursued them. The other thing is just, I think there's a limited traction out there for programs that don't have to be accredited to pursue accreditation. There's been voluntary accreditation for post-professional master's degrees since the 70s, and the highest we ever hit was 16 programs. And there's always been a number of programs, post-professional master's programs in athletic training, that were very good, very high quality, that never pursued KD accreditation because they didn't have to. So I think that that's probably going to hold true at the DAT level as well.
So for all those that are listening that are not in the world of education the way we are, is that in order to sit for the BOC exam currently at the undergraduate level or at the entry-level master's, they have to graduate from a KD accredited program. Whereas if you're going to pursue a post-professional master's degree, or at this point, a DAT program, a Doctor of Athletic Training, they don't necessarily have to be KD accredited. And I just want people that are listening to understand the difference between those two factors.
Yeah. I mean, for example, our post-professional master's degree program here at ATSU is KD accredited. We've chosen to go through that quality assurance process. We value it. We think it's relevant. Our DAT program is not. And one of the major reasons is we don't require clinical education at the DAT level. And I don't think you should have to, certainly. But the accreditation standards that were written for the master's program, you have to require clinical education, which I think is totally appropriate. And so it fits for us at one degree level. It doesn't fit for us at another.
Right. So let's move on. You talked about there are about four DAT programs right now. I think Idaho was the first, right? And then AT Still, and then Indiana State came on, or there's another one between?
I think we were two, they were three, I think, but I might be wrong. And I apologize to Indiana State friends if we were tied or you beat us. It's irrelevant. And then Temple is the most recent, I believe.
In Philadelphia. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's the goal of the Doctor of Athletic Training program?
That's a great tricky question. And I've been answering it lately by telling people you have to ask that DAT program, because like PhD programs, they all have their own specific goals, right? You could boil it down. You could say a PhD program, the generic uniform goal of a PhD program is to produce an independent scholar.
Okay.
Right. That's how I would define it. And if you were to boil down the unique, you know, general common goal of a DAT program, my hope is that it would be to produce an advanced practice leader, somebody not to produce a clinical expert with a bunch, not to be focused on hands-on skills, but to produce somebody at a leadership level who ideally would, you know, move into a director of sports medicine position, head athletic trainer, coordinating a staff of people, somebody at a leadership level.
So it's really designed to prepare an advanced practice professional to move into a leadership position in a clinical setting.
Yeah, or I have no problem with engagement in the academic environment as well. I think that's totally appropriate. I think the progression that I see an individual going through would be earning their professional degree, focusing on transition to practice, then ideally pursuing something like a residency program to become a clinical expert. And then once they become a clinical expert, ideally, and this sort of structure doesn't really exist yet, but ideally, once they've pursued that mechanism, then looking at a DAT program to become more of an advanced practice leader. I think DAT in a faculty role are perfectly aligned to be, say, a clinical education coordinator, certainly to be high quality preceptors. There might be some institutions that accept that degree for a faculty line, most likely a non-tenure or a clinical faculty line.
Okay. Yep, got it. So tell us a little bit more about where do you see the number of athletic trainers going into the DAT programs coming from? So are these people that have been out practicing for a while, or are these people that are essentially have, like, for instance, Melanie Kwok? Melanie's got her undergraduate degree. She's going to graduate from her MAT program. You want a little bit of experience and then apply. So what are some criteria that you're looking for? And I know that you can speak about the AT program, the DAT program at AT Still.
Yeah.
What's the likely candidate that gets into your program?
All of the above. It's really been all comers. We've had students particularly come straight from our master's because we give them some advanced standing because we have a lot of graduate credits in our master's degree program. But we've also had students come straight from other professional entry-level master's degree programs. You do have to have a master's degree to get in. The majority of our students have been out practicing for some period of time, some of them for extensive, you know, we've got some 20-year veterans in the DAT program. And I think, you know, it's a difficult, it's what the student, you know, wants to get out of it. There's some students that you know, I think really benefit from coming right away. I think there's other students that would benefit from waiting longer. I think they make a healthy mix in the classes sometimes. I think you get a little bit of the, you know, the people that have been out practicing for 10, 20 years haven't necessarily had a whole lot of athletic training education, right?
I mean,
they're an athletic trainer, they earn the BOC credential, but they maybe didn't have a lot of academic preparation in athletic training courses. And certainly the students that are coming out now have a lot more of that. And so sometimes there's a nice interplay between those two groups.
So are you seeing one way or another where, let's say somebody's been out for 25 years and they got a master's degree and let's just call it sport and fitness admin, whatever it is. Then you had somebody that came out of, like Melanie, an entry-level master's degree. Are you seeing their ability to perform in the DAT program grade-wise? Is that any different from what you're seeing?
No. I would say the breakdown would be, you know, the newer graduate like Melanie is going to have a just kind of a better handle on some of the contemporary issues, mm-hmm. but is going to lack a lot of real-world context to apply some of the material, versus the person that's been out longer is going to have all kinds of real world context that's going to bring, I think, a richer meaning to the stuff that they're learning, because they can go, oh yeah, I've seen that situation. I've been in that scenario. I've had that issue. But it might be some of the content might be a little more foreign to them, like some of the things like patient-oriented outcomes or quality improvement or, you know, health information technology, things that maybe the newer students are getting a little more orientation to. The practicing person who's been out there a long time may have had less orientation to, but they're able to maybe apply some of the content in a more meaningful way for them.
So staying on this topic for a second, then we'll move on. Those people that are applying to your DAT program, can you give us a general overview as to why they've chosen to pursue a DAT degree?
Yeah, it's a great question too. And it's really individual. Some of them see it as a means for career elevation. They see that, you know, earning a higher degree is going to help them advance. Some of them are very much just interested in the content. Mm-hmm. Some have started, say, some of our areas like orthopedic rehabilitation and clinical decision making, we package as certificate programs. So they're originally just kind of interested in some of the content as a certificate program, and then they roll in. A number of them are interested in education roles. Mm-hmm. They're in clinical environments and they want to be able to move into education some way. We do spend a lot of time talking about the fact that, you know, this degree isn't likely going to lead to a tenure track research responsibility position at a research extensive institution, right? But if you look at the mix of KD accredited programs, that's not the majority of programs,
right?
You know, and certainly as we move to an entry level master's, the regional accreditors are going to be requiring the faculty have more education in the discipline of athletic training,
correct?
Not the sport admin master's. And so I actually think there's going to be a lot more opportunity for these people than I'm willing to sell, because mm-hmm. I don't know that, and I don't want to raise false hopes that this degree is going to be a doorway into academia, but I ultimately think it probably will be more than we expect.
Yeah. We're at a point now in our specific program, and I've asked my department chair, Dan O'Connor, to give me a read on how the university is going to interpret the DAT program or the DAT degree.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because where I see, and this is just Josh Yellen speaking, that where I see athletic training going is that somebody who's trained to be an administrator, like for instance, my EdD degree is in ed leadership, and I was trained under some really incredible academic administrators to learn how to run programs and understand accreditation and understand the business of what we do. Then my partner in crime, Mark Knobloch, he's got his PhD in exercise science, and he did a 2.5-year postdoc at the Baylor College of Medicine. So as a master's degree, you know, one of the things that was important to me was to build a research branch and a research component of what we do, where people like Melanie, she's got to write a case study every semester, and one of those case studies will be submitted for publication, presentation, and professional organization. Then, moving on, I need faculty that have content expertise in the areas in practice. So if I really follow the medical model, which is what I'm trying to build my MAT program after, you know, the urologist is not teaching orthopedics. And the orthopedist is not teaching oncology, right? So it's the person that's able to come out and they have some advanced practice content expertise in therapeutic intervention. And you know what? That person that has content expertise is going to teach all the therapeutic intervention courses. And the person that has content expertise in orthopedics will teach all the orthopedic courses. And that's how I kind of see the role of the DAT coming out and how they fit in. And I'm just speaking of how I look at that DAT fitting into the MAT program at UH. I don't know how it fits into all the other programs.
And that's a great model. I mean, the KD, you know, has been going around doing their, you know, the KD Believes talk for years now about sort of what they see the future being. And one of the things is faculty with areas of, you know, specific expertise.
Right.
Essentially, the days of the an athletic training program can be run by one or two faculty members, and one or two people can have all the knowledge and expertise needed to teach all the classes in athletic training are going the way of the dinosaur, right? So your model is right on, and my hope would be that, you know, people would recognize, you know, somebody would need to have some more defined area of expertise than just the DAT, right? But then the DAT would give them a graduate level degree to be able to teach in a master's program that I would think would be appropriate. You know, the medical model would have clinical faculty versus basic science faculty.
Right.
And it's, I don't think it's necessarily appropriate for, you know, a professional entry-level health professions program to be delivered by all basic science folks. Right. There need to be some faculty that have clinical expertise. And I think that's really where the DAT folks can come in and play a huge role. And we also have a lot of program faculty right now across the country who only have a master's degree. So it's interesting to me, you know, sort of one of the critiques against the DAT has been, oh, well, these people are never going to be able to be faculty. This DAT degree is never going to allow them to be faculty. Well, why? When right now, presently, we have many, many faculty across the country in our athletic training programs who only have a master's degree.
Correct.
Why would suddenly a higher level degree not qualify somebody for some of these faculty positions?
Yeah, correct.
It makes sense to me.
Just to tell you how much of an accreditation geek I am, the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, standard 3.7.1, you can go check it, says that the faculty has specific content expertise.
Yeah.
And so at a time where there was a time where the, quote, terminal degree in athletic training was a master's degree because we didn't have DATs, right? Yeah. We didn't have content expertise. Maybe we had some PhDs in sports medicine. But it was really that master's degree, that terminal degree. But now we have content expertise in you know, a DAT, which is similar to, is one of my questions that, you know, I was sending back and forth, which, by the way, you owe us the lottery numbers.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. Only gave them to Jeremy.
Okay. Thanks. And, you know, which is similar then to some other of our healthcare partners. So, for instance, PT right now is at an entry-level doctoral degree. OT has made a decision from an accreditation standard to stay at both the master's and the doctoral degree. PA still has a master's degree. But nursing is a really interesting model that they have the DNS or the DNP degree. And that DNS and DNP degree is similar to the DAT, correct?
Yeah. The DNP would be more analogous, but yeah, they're both very similar.
Okay. So are you seeing any pay differences from those that are coming out with a DAT degree? So they've been out practicing for a while, and we already know that if you're out practicing for a while, your salary is already going to be higher. But are you seeing any substantial pay differences or increases
So first, we haven't graduated any students yet. I mean, our first group of graduating students is going to be here in the next, I think, 6 months.
That's exciting.
It'll only be a few. Yeah, so it's exciting. But I don't expect, quite frankly, at all, that it's going to lead to any immediate increase in pay. I think in athletic training, people get paid based on titles and positions that they hold. And so to the degree that the degree can help them leverage a better position,
right,
I think they'll get better pay. But I think our profession has always been really title driven in terms of what gets people a paycheck. And I don't think the degree, just like I don't think a master's degree has necessarily done a whole lot for people, other than it's almost been the default for a lot of job applications as well. If you don't have that master's degree, you're just not even going to be competitive to get that job.
Right.
And so it's been the foot in the door. So I don't see, I think it'd be disingenuous to say that I think this degree program is going to lead to significant salary differences for people, other than the hope that it gives them the tools and the ability to leverage better positions for themselves over time.
Because they have more clinical expertise in that area.
They have a higher, they have a high, the terminology I use a lot is they have a higher degree of sophistication. And I use, you know, a little bit cautiously the term sophistication, because I think people can be offended by the idea that, that, you know, if there's an implication that they're somehow less sophisticated, which is not the meaning, but, you know, we have so few people with actual academic preparation in athletic training, you know, even the master's degrees, you know, guesstimate numbers are maybe 6% of the profession actually has a master's degree in athletic training.
Right.
Means the average person out there either did an internship where they maybe had 3-4 classes, and then they did a GA where their classes were not athletic training, and now they're out there practicing or teaching, and they've had maybe 3-4 athletic training courses in their whole career, or maybe they went through an accredited curriculum program that we used to call them, and so they've got some more coursework, but then they likely did a GA.
Right.
And so they only have athletic training coursework at the bachelor's degree level. So we have, you know, very, very few people that have had much graduate training in the discipline of athletic training. And so when I talk about sophistication, I mean, you know, graduate training in the discipline of athletic training, not graduate training in biomechanics or exercise science or sport admin, which are all important, valuable areas of study, but you wouldn't necessarily see, say, another health profession getting a master's degree in another discipline. They'd be pursuing it in their own discipline.
Right.
So I think one thing the DAT program does is it opens up an avenue for all those people out there that have a master's degree, but it's probably not in athletic training, to go really now study athletic training and get much greater depth and breadth of knowledge in the discipline that they work in. So I think that's really important in raising the bar. And just to go back to your example of the doctor nursing practice, I had the fortunate opportunity to sit next to the executive director of the American Association of Colleges of Nursing. And it was shortly after they had, you know, really ramped up their doctor nursing practice. And I asked her, what was the most significant thing that it did? And she said it raised the level of sophistication of the nursing profession.
Sure.
And I had been thinking, you know, and talking that term in my head. So the fact that she said it really, you know, surprised, I was thrilled actually. I said, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much? And she said, oh, it's probably a 7. Across the board, this degree has raised the sophistication of the profession of nursing by a 7. And I said, well, what evidence, what, how do you see that manifesting? And she said, when I go to conferences around the country, it's, I see a difference, a higher level of sophistication of the questions being asked and the answers being given. And I thought, wow. So in my mind, that's sort of the dream of what the DAT could do for the athletic training profession.
You know, one of the things that I'm always pointing out to Melanie and her cohort is their ability, because I really believe, right, I kind of came from the older school, in that the school that I graduated from undergraduate, we were KHEP accredited. That's how far back I go. And then my master's degree, like you were saying, The degree itself is in kinesiology, but my emphasis was in essentially sports medicine. And then my doctorate is obviously in education, educational leadership. And so Melanie's generation is coming out with very specific knowledge, and they're incredibly intelligent in what they know and the knowledge that they've acquired and how they're able to apply it. And one of the things that I think this generation, at least this, as we're moving to the entry-level master's, is doing, it's teaching more of the problem-solving model, right? That they're able to take complex questions and solve those problems and then move on. So along those lines, as we move to the entry-level master's, 2022 will be the cutoff. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 2019 is the last year that any undergraduate program will be accredited. Is that correct? Do you remember offhand?
Meaning a new program?
A new program. I don't remember.
There's a specific date for when you could accept a new cohort of students.
Right.
And I think it's 2019. But
so everybody's going to move to the entry level master's degree. And so now for those people that want to get post-professional education, there are two real options here are certificates, right, of education, et cetera, or the DAT, or they can move on to an academic doctoral degree. That's really where we're headed.
Well, you know, where I hope we're headed is an explosion of residency programs.
I hope so, too.
I think that those offer just huge potential for more one-on-one mentored clinical training to really create clinical experts. And that concept has been slow to catch on. But I think as we move to the entry-level masters, I think what people are going to see is people want additional knowledge, right? I mean, people, they cross the entry-level finish line and they don't feel like they're, you know, an expert, and they shouldn't. So they're looking for valid avenues to pursue more education. And I think that, you know, the residency programs are just going to be great because they're clinical, right? And at the end of the day, this is a clinical profession where people are putting their hands on patients. And so we want them to have these training avenues to go get better at treating patients. And then ultimately, I'd like to see them, you know, those who want to move into leadership roles, and potentially some academic roles, you know, pursue the DAT program. And then some who really want to be independent researchers and do original investigative research, pursue the research doctorates. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell us what makes the DAT program. We're going to allow you to promote your DAT program at AT Still. And so, you know, give us a plug for AT Still's DAT program. What separates your program from other programs? Why would somebody, let's say Melanie, in a few years, she decides, yeah, I want to go back for a DAT, and I remember seeing Dr. Sowers, and I want to apply. So what makes your program special or different?
Yeah, I think the strengths of our program are undoubtedly the faculty, first and foremost, and then the curriculum that they've put together. So I'm obviously significantly biased, right? But I think we've got the best faculty in the country of any academic program that we've been able to put together. And they just work tremendously well together. Everybody has a shared vision of kind of where we're going and why we're doing it. And we've been chipping away at it for a long time. And the kind of shared concepts around producing a student that understands how to assess their own practice and engage in assessment of patient-oriented outcomes, engage in quality improvement, use health information technology, be an evidence-based practice clinician, and then sort of focused on, you know, this expertise in orthopedic rehab, and then the applied research project. I think if you look at the faculty that we have and the courses that, you know, come together to achieve the programmatic outcomes, I think that's what really sets us apart. Another, you know, kind of unique thing about what we have is our Winter Institute. We do have a 1 week in-person experience where we've got committed external faculty, Mark Larson, you know, former Katie president, Sarah Brown, former BOC president, chair of the standards committee now, Andy Winterstein, program director at University of Wisconsin, Dave Perrin, former, you know, provost and now dean of the College of Health at mm-hmm. University of Utah. Now I feel like I'm going to forget somebody and I feel bad.
I noticed that you have Sue Falzone on faculty.
Yeah, she's now one of our faculty, internationally renowned as probably one of the most, you know, influential clinical leaders mm-hmm. in the field of sports medicine. And, you know, she teaches courses in the DAT. She participates in the Winter Institute. So that experience is a really powerful experience. Students come out of that really changed. I teach that course and sort of talk about it as a transformational educational experience, and they see it as that. And, you know, the faculty give up a week of their life to come out here and engage in it all day, every day for 4 solid days of learning. It's really rich. And I think that's unique. So, but it's mostly the people and then the content that they've been able to put together and the way it strings together, I think is our biggest strength.
So tell us a little, what makes the curriculum in a DAT program a little bit different? So for instance, in a traditional academic degree, and these are some of the questions that I field from students or from some other people, and I just don't know because I'm not part of a DAT program, but do they need to be, you know, are they attending class every day? Is it, you know, they need to have a certain residency over the summer? Tell us the makeup, the structure of how this DAT program is run.
So they're all, everybody's different, right? I mean, just like every PhD program, you know, it's interesting. There's a number of people that would really like to see the DAT programs homogenized, mm-hmm. and they're confused. And then that confusion leads to some angst that, you know, all the programs don't look the same. To which my kind of standard response is, well, neither do all PhD programs, right? Or EDD programs. If you go look at them, they all have their own unique twist. So our program is actually, the vast majority of it is delivered online, right? So people are continuing to work full time. They've got their spouses, their kids, their mortgage, their dog, whatever, right? They've got their daily life that they do. And then they engage weekly, you know, throughout the whole week, they engage a lot in their online courses. And then the only on-campus requirement that we have is that 1 week intensive education experience.
And that's the Winter Institute?
That's the Winter Institute, yeah.
So the only time that they would come to, it's Mesa, Arizona, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
The only time to come to, which is a beautiful area, by the way, if you haven't been there, it's a beautiful area.
It's quite beautiful.
And so if you, the only time that they need to be on A.T. Still's campus in their entire curriculum is during that Winter Institute.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's one time throughout their, or that's every year?
It's only one time, although the students that go to it want to come back every year, and we're telling them, you know, it's really kind of the same content all over again. Yeah, that's fine. I want to come back, but we don't have room to bring them back. But it's fully developed for adult learners that are out in the field practicing or teaching. We have a number of educators that are in the program now, a number of folks who are clinical education coordinators now who are pursuing this. And so they've got their day job and they're doing this on evenings, weekends, and whenever they can carve out free time. Most students only take one or two classes at a time.
And how many hours is required?
It's a 70 credit hour degree, 70 credit hours post the master's.
Sure.
And so they chip away at it. It takes them a good, you know, probably minimum 3 years.
Sure. And is there at the end, there's a capstone project or a
research? They do an applied research project that's the way I always describe it is try to identify a real world problem that you have and then use our applied research process to propose and try to implement a solution. People are doing things, a variety of different things. Some people are doing, you know, there is an option for original investigative research, but we don't necessarily encourage that because it's not necessarily the goal of the degree. Mm-hmm. But there's people doing quality improvement projects, people doing critically appraised topics, people proposing, you know, real world solutions to problems that they have. It's just a matter of working with their advisor and coming up with an acceptable. It's actually, it's 29 credits of the 70 credits.
Is the project that they're doing.
Yeah. There's a whole sequence of courses that walk you through sort of, you know, there's a research methods and design, there's a methods of data analysis, there's, you know, analyzing the problem, disseminating results, lots of, you know, coursework like that that you would think of as sort of traditional graduate research oriented coursework.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Sowers, along those lines, do you have students that kind of propose this type of project at like the NATA conventions or like for us, for our region, SWATA, to actually help apply other athletic trainers in the field to be like, hey, I can actually apply this theory and let's see if we can work out a plan to enhance a sports medicine program?
Yeah, we have not. I'm trying to think. Again, since no student has completed the program yet, and that's really the final thing that they do, no student has actually completed their applied research project yet. So nobody's presented one yet. Mm-hmm. Although we have had students in the program publish manuscripts, like critically appraised topics that they have done in, say, their evidence-based practice course. And then they've ended up publishing that paper in Journal of Sport Rehab, mm-hmm. for example. So we have had students engaged in the program publishing works that they've done in the program, but I don't believe yet we've had a student present their applied research project either locally, regionally, nationally, but that will happen. That's an expected intended consequence of the exercise. It's not a requirement. So it's not, you know, you can't graduate unless your paper gets presented someplace, but it will happen, particularly because the faculty that are working with these students, that's the currency that they, you know, live in. That's their way of doing business. So they're going to be motivated to spend, to translate the time and energy that they've put into advising these projects into, you know, product.
Yeah. Getting them published at conferences and in papers, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to like the online curriculum, and you said that most of the courses are online. Is it kind of like a live feed Skype type presentation, or is it just like pre-recorded and PowerPoints, and a DAT student just kind of go over that by themselves? Or
so it's all asynchronous. So that's intentional because all the people are in different time zones. And they all have different schedules, right? So a typical course, for instance, we just got done teaching the quality improvement and patient safety course. And the typical way that would work is all of the courses are done over 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. So they're able to be fairly concentrated and get through the material in a reasonable clip, right? So they would have, in the first week, say, they would have readings that they were expected to do, presentations they're expected to watch, and then engage in a discussion thread online that's asynchronous, where they're expected to post, say, some reflections on or thoughts they have on the material, and then they're expected to engage their classmates in their classmates' discussion threads and then manage their own threads. And then the faculty are engaging with all the students about whatever the content is. And then they have regular assignments. In the quality improvement course, for instance, they're actually proposing a full quality improvement project. So across the 10 weeks, there's different, you know, from creating an aim statement to evaluating the STEEP criteria and doing a PDSA cycle. So, and then at the end, they actually present, again, they prepare a presentation of their quality improvement project that they upload, and then their students watch it. But again, it all happens asynchronous because it's student-centered. There's no way somebody's going to be at practice. Somebody's going to be, you know, getting married. Somebody's going to be, you know, doing whatever. So it's all structured to be asynchronous.
Yes. You know, my department chair, when I was getting my doctorate, his name is Mike Richardson. Part of his introduction when our cohort came in for the doctoral degree, he said, anything good or bad that will happen to you in life will happen while you're in this doctoral program. Right. It seems like everything good or bad seems to be exponentially more emotional than it would be if you're not right in one of these professional programs. So, yeah, I certainly understand it.
It's stressful. A lot of students, And we advise against it, you know, I'm going to go three classes at a time. It's probably not a good, I'm different, you know.
No, you're not.
And then they do it one time, they're like, oh man, I'm not doing that again. That was way too much. Yeah. I shouldn't have done that. You were right. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah. Hey, did you see his face? It's the same face we give you guys.
Yeah. We actually had an accelerated kind of sample degree program. They don't go through it in a cohort model. They can come in 4 times a year, and then they plan out their curriculum based on when the courses are offered, and they're going to go at different paces. They end up taking classes with, you know, the same sets of students pretty regularly, but it's not, you and I are not necessarily taking the exact same curriculum, right? And we used to have a sample curriculum that was sort of the accelerated, and we actually just got, we took it offline. We don't even show it to the students anymore because it's just, it was too much because you want to get something out of it, right? So there needs to be time for reflection, and there needs to be time to do it at a quality pace. And for the students who are working full-time jobs, it's not reasonable.
Right. So can I go back? You said they're going in 10-week modules. Did you all conceive the 10-week modules based on the medical education model? Or was that just something that kind of organically built itself?
Well, we don't have time for that story. It's a consequence of the way our university decided to structure our academic calendar.
Uh-huh.
That is actually not ideal for a lot of things, but it works out really, really well for online education.
Uh-huh.
We used to be 12 weeks, and that was good too, actually, but still a little bit long, kind of a traditional 16-week semester in the online world kind of drags on a little bit too long. And we had developed, I had started 2 other online programs before this one. So I had quite a bit of, you know, experience to draw on, and 10 weeks turns out to be really just about perfect. It's long enough to get what you need, but it doesn't keep dragging on to where the students lose interest. And then they get a 2-week break, and then they jump right back into another 10 weeks.
So it really had nothing to do with,
No pedagogy whatsoever.
Yeah,
no science.
There was no coordination with the osteopathic medical school saying, hey, how do you all teach your class? We're going to model after this. It just kind of happened.
It just happened, and we got lucky. Sometimes my clean living pays off.
That's good.
I have another question, Dr. Sowers. I was actually wondering, I was thinking about doing a DAT program after getting out in the real world for a few years. What's the difference between your program at AT still compared to like Temple, Indiana? And I did a little light research, and I saw that there's a couple out there, but yours popped up first on Google search, which is great. So I was like, oh, cool. So like, what's the difference between those?
That's always a tricky question, right? Because you're sort of asking for a head-to-head comparison, like, you know, what's the difference between an AT and a PT, right? And your answer could always offend. So what I would say is look first and foremost at program outcomes, because whatever program you're looking at, their sort of contract to you of what you should get out of it really should be their program outcomes. And then look to see, you know, do they have a curriculum and a faculty that looks like they could deliver on that promise, right? That looks like they could prepare you to achieve those outcomes. And so I think what sets us apart is just we have different program outcomes than they do, and we have a different faculty delivering a different curriculum to achieve those outcomes. And for some students, they're going to like one set of outcomes and one curriculum and one pace, right? There's different credit hours. So some programs are going to be, you know, in some cases, significantly fewer credit hours. Cost becomes a factor. I would look at cost differentials. In some cases, you might have, you know, a lot less credit hours, but a similar cost. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for some people, fewer credits means faster, means better. For other students, they're looking more for, you know, what am I actually going to get out of this in terms of comprehensiveness. Some are going to look at just content focus. Some of the programs are very clinical, hands-on, skill focused. And so for somebody in your situation, that might be more attractive, right? Because mm-hmm. you presumably have less experience than some of the other students. For me, that's not where I see sort of in the modes of, you know, what do we need different programs to do? I don't think that's the role of a DAT program. But I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that, you know, and I think if another DAT program can have that focus and that's what their students want and their students are happy getting that and they can be successful, then that's fantastic, right? Then it's meeting the needs of the students that are pursuing that program. It creates, there's some confusion, right, around the DAT because the programs aren't the same. But neither historically have been the post-professional master's programs, right? They haven't been the same. So being the same doesn't necessarily equate to some better thing for our profession. I completely danced around your question, admittedly, but I would kick it back on the consumer and say, you know, look at the outcomes, look at the curriculum, look at the faculty, look at the number of credits, look at the cost, and then decide what is the right solution for you. Because what's different about us is probably all of those things compared to the other programs.
Right.
And for some people, those things are going to be better on our side. And for some people, what the other programs are offering is going to be better from them. And that's great. It creates consumer choice.
So on the broadcast, right, throughout the month of March, happy National Athletic Training Month, everybody. We've talked to Dr. Scott Saylor, Dr. Mark Merrick. Now we're talking to Dr. Eric Sowers. We've talked to a number of really smart people that are leaders in the profession. And one of the things that we're always interested in, we've gotten all these different, thought processes on where athletic training is going. If you talk to Mark, he says one thing. You talk to Scott, he says another. And now we're at a point, obviously, we're moving to an entry-level master's. Hopefully, and I agree with you, Eric, that hopefully the residency model explodes because that's where it needs to. And then if you want more specific training, you can go on and get some more advanced certificates or go on for a DAT program. With all of that said, where do you think athletic training is going as a profession? Because you've seemed to have covered in your profession so far almost the gamut of all of this education, right? You've seen the undergraduate, you've seen the entry-level master's, you've seen the post-professional master's. You've seen somewhere between the post-professional master's and doctorate, the certificate, and now you're seeing the doctorate.
Yeah.
So where do you think the profession is going?
Educationally or beyond?
Yes. Professionally, educationally, all of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of, you know, kind of models and structures, right? So my hope would be that the general practice of athletic training or the general model of athletic training doesn't really change, right? We still have people taking care of patients in, you know, the secondary school settings, collegiate settings, pro sports. We're expanding industrial setting, military, that our services are still needed in all those places. What my hope and vision would be is that we raise the bar of our professional education by moving to the entry-level master's, that we don't just change the degree name, right? That we actually do something fundamentally different and better so that we're producing a better product to enter the market. But then once people enter the market, I would actually like to see us go back to internship opportunities after people have their credential so that if they want the same, like right now, a PBATS or PFATS internship is really just about getting exposure to an environment, right? And we have a lot of environments, military, industrial, performing arts. And there's room for people to have on-the-job training internships to get exposure to these different environments to help them make a career choice. Because you can't reasonably expose them to all of it in an entry-level master's.
Right.
It's not possible. So for some people, they might know right straight away, I want to go into a secondary school. That's what I want to do. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to go out. I'm going to do that. Other people might want to dip their feet in different environments. I think an internship would be great for that. I think then we need to create clinical experts. Because we have patients with complex problems and athletic training is a complicated field, right? And so I would love to see us have residency programs, say in emergency medicine. So ideally the football athletic trainers are people that have maybe done a residency program in emergency medicine. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've got a rehab coordinator who's done a residency program in rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. maybe you've got somebody on staff at a larger institution who's done a residency program in behavioral health, because, you know, a major percentage of patient care issues right now are related to behavioral health issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then we start to develop these folks with clinical expertise. Maybe the secondary school athletic trainer has done a residency in pediatrics and really understands the unique concerns of that patient population. So then hopefully then you've got folks rising into leadership roles in the clinical realm who've done a DAT program. And hopefully clinical preceptors are clinical experts from residency programs, mm-hmm. and DHT trained folks. Mm-hmm. So you've got folks with a higher level of academic and clinical training our future athletic trainers than just somebody with the same degree of training as they have. Right. I think that's important. I think we owe it to our students to have people training them that have higher degree of training and expertise than they have formally, either through a residency or through a DAT. And then the DAT folks, I hope, are also stepping over into the academic realm and teaching clinical courses. Maybe they're the clin ed coordinator. And then, of course, we've got our PhD folks who are generating new original knowledge and maintaining the knowledge of the field. And so my sort of grand scheme is this mix. We've had this homogenous, everybody just did an entry level program. Then people did a GA position. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of it. And then some folks went on to do this PhD, which was way, way different than this GA thing. So we ended up with this GA thing over here and this PhD thing over here. And the two don't talk. They don't communicate super well. They're very different products. So if we've got entry level masters, internships to help folks decide where they want to go work and stay there, residents to create experts, DAT programs to create leaders, and then PhD programs to be these scholars, I think we have a broader spread with more dots that can connect everybody. That's my vision.
I've also noticed in this space, you're also seeing some DSC degrees pop up. So for those that don't necessarily understand, what's the difference between a DSC, right, and a DAT? I mean, we all kind of know the difference between the PhD and the EDD, but now we're seeing some other doctoral degrees come into right. this space. So can you talk a little bit about what is the DSC?
It really depends. And then there's the DHSC. So there's a Doctor of Health Science and a Doctor of Science. There's a lot of Ds right now. And there's not, you know, there's not uniformity. I would evaluate the individual degree based on, is its intent to create an independent research investigator, or is it something else?
Right.
There are like one of my faculty, Dr. Kenny Lamb, just got an NATA Foundation Outcomes Grant to do a point of care clinical trial, probably one of the most innovative point of care research projects ever in our profession. He's a DSC. He did his DSC at Boston University. It, in every facet that I can think of, is analogous to a PhD. They just happen to offer it as a DSC. Mm-hmm. There are other DSCs and DHSCs that have folks do some form of research, but they're not necessarily trying to create an independent scholar. The UK Council of Graduate Schools did a big study, and I steal their quote all the time. They basically, because they were looking in Europe, but there's all these alternative Ds, and we don't know what they are. We don't know what to make of them. And they basically concluded, as did the Higher Learning Commission, which is our regional accreditor. They did an assessment of doctoral degrees because everybody's concerned about these different names and what are they. And basically both concluded that there's room for different kinds, particularly in healthcare, for these more professional types of doctorates. And really the difference is, are you trying to produce a professional scholar, which is the more the PhD, EDD, or are you trying to produce a scholarly professional, mm-hmm. which is more of the DAT, Doctor of Health Sciences. DSC's kind of split. I think most of them fall more like the PhD. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to look at the independent degree. And just like all folks are not created equal, right? All degrees are not created equal. And you have to look, is the degree this person has, was it an original investigative degree? Was it not? And they're going to be different, and it's going to be confusing, unfortunately. And there's really no way to get around that. But I would say, you know, look at PhD programs. They're not all the same. They're not all producing Kevin Guskowicz and Doug Casas. And so
I think the world is only capable of having one or two of those at a time anyway.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, geez, the profession from an educational standpoint, we were at a bachelor's degree and, you know, we had this kind of internship model. Then we became more uniformed and then it was an accredited model. And then we discovered that as a profession, we need to move to an entry-level master's. We look more like our healthcare partners this way. And so that has somewhat been stabilized. And right. Now it's the post-professional education, the residency programs. I love your idea about the internship. The certificate programs, I think, are outstanding. And now all the different – I'm going to steal your quote. All the different Ds. I love that. Yeah. what do we do with all of these now? And so that seems to be the next great, adventure in athletic training is what do we do with all the D's, right? What do we do with all this? And how does this help the individual get to where they want to get to? And how does this help the overall profession? And how do we stay competitive in the healthcare market?
Yeah. And I wouldn't worry so much about what we do with the D's, and I would flip it and, you know, ask not what we can do for the D's, what the D's can do for us. And you know, those folks are going to be significant contributors to advance our profession. And we should probably just sit back and get out of the way and let the free market work. And if the degrees gain traction, they'll multiply and more people will pursue them. And over time, like the master's, right? Nobody mandated the athletic trainers have a master's degree. But the market wanted a master's degree. Right. And so it sort of became, you know, if you want to be competitive for a lot of jobs, you're probably going to have to get some kind of master's degree. But that wasn't driven by the NATA or the KD or KHEP back then. That was market forces. So it's going to be interesting to see what the market does, you know, relative to the DAT. I have no idea.
Dr. Sowers, one of the things that you had said was, about the nurses, you said something along the lines of the best thing to come out of their move to a master's program. Can you repeat that for me?
The best thing that came out of their development of the Doctor of Nursing Practice, which is the best analog to the DAT that there is, because it's a post-professional doctoral degree that's to produce a scholarly professional, not a professional scholar. So they said the best thing that came out of that was it raised the sophistication of the whole profession of nursing. More sophisticated presentations, more sophisticated questions, more sophisticated answers. Mm-hmm. It took a whole bunch of people that were already out there practicing and gave them a route to get more education. Right now, for all the people that are out there, especially the folks that have a master's, which is the majority, the only way they can go get more education in athletic training really is to do a PhD that's probably at best in sports medicine. Mm-hmm. And what that's going to do is it's going to pull them completely out of patient care. So the only opportunity we have for folks to get greater, higher education right now takes them away from treating patients, versus this DAT program now gives an avenue for folks who are out there working full time to actually get greater knowledge and skill development and still stay in the realm of patient care and treating patients. So I think that's what's going to be a huge impactful positive for our profession.
And do you ever see athletic training moving the way of, say, a DPT or even an audiologist, where currently we will be at the entry-level master's, and then we have the option to go on and have advanced practice degrees, a DAT. Whereas PT has made a decision to say, you know what, we're gonna go into the space or the field of an entry-level doctoral degree. And I understand somewhat from a business standpoint why they did that, so they can get direct access. And they want to compete in the same space as chiropractors, et cetera. For all the PTs, all my PT friends, you know, please don't take that comment offensively. But you ever see the athletic training field moving to an entry-level doctoral degree? Or we will stay at an entry-level master's and for those people that want more training, continue on to a post-professional doctoral degree?
I think you could justify it, because I think that one of the major justifications that PT used, and I I agree with it, is the complexity of the nature of practice. I think the nature of athletic training practice is complex enough that it could warrant it. One thing that they did was they had their master's degrees, and to get everything in, they all turned into 3-year master's degrees that were 100+ credit hours. Mm-hmm. And then they started looking around going, well, this is earns you a D anywhere else on campus, right? You go to graduate school for 3 years and you take this many credits, you're going to earn a D. So I think that could happen in athletic training programs, right? People just go, wow, now that I'm at the graduate level, I'm unfettered I'm not competing with art history anymore.
Right.
So I can add in more and more and more, and suddenly we could have these kind of bigger programs, and then people could say, well, it's so big, it deserves a D. I think you could justify it. I hope we don't go that way at the entry level, because I think we could price ourselves out of the market. Mm-hmm. I think I don't enjoy saying this, and probably people don't like me when I say it, but I'll say it anyways. I think there's a concern. Our employment settings are very attractive, mm-hmm. right? Folks want to do what we do. And as soon as we make the same amount of money and work just as few hours as other people do, those other people will say, oh, wow, I can make my money and work my hours, but I can do it over in that really exciting environment. I'm going to go take that job. Mm-hmm. And so we're at a competitive advantage right now that I think we need to balance. I think obviously salaries need to go way up. I think work-life balance needs to be way improved. But there's a point where if we push right up into our competitors, they're going to go, oh, now that environment is much more interesting to me. And we're not just going to be competing against ourselves. We're going to be competing against PTs much more, PAs much more, folks that I think are going to try to come right into these very exciting environments that we get to work at, that they've stayed out of because they've seen the pay and the work expectations as not very attractive to mm-hmm. them. So the more we fix that problem, the more we potentially create a competition problem. Mm-hmm. And that's it's an ugly conundrum.
It's a big word. He's a smart guy. Big word. Him and Merrick. Mickey Cuffett, Pam Hansen, some of the smartest people I know. All right. Well, are there any other questions? Melanie, you have any questions for Dr. Sowers? Didn't I tell you he was smart? I told you he was smart.
No, yeah. I'm good.
I'm smarter because I know him. That's what it is. Any other questions, Jeremy?
No, I think you've kind of covered everything that I had. Like I said, one of my big questions was, why would someone go to the DAT? And I think you've covered that. And I think my favorite thing that you said was that your program is better suited for someone who's been in the field and is currently in the field, and they're going to continue their education, and not someone who's just going to go get all this education without ever having done the job. And so I am a fan of continuing education, but I don't want somebody to come in and try and do my job without ever having done it, you know? And so I like how you guys have your program set up. So,
oh, good. Thanks. Well, you should come and join it.
Well, I don't have a master's, so I had to do that first.
Hey, you should come get your master's with us, and then.
Well, yours isn't set up so that I could do it online. You see, I've got I got 3 kids.
Oh,
a wife, a mortgage.
Yeah.
We have an online master's in kinesiology, and there's a lot of athletic trainers actually in it.
There you go.
There it is. Actually, I think one of my former students, Josh Dossie, did an online master's at AT Still University, and he's now. What's that?
It was human. When I started, it was a human movement program in my department. And then for a variety of reasons, they started a new school and they moved that program over there. So I'm not associated with it anymore, but it's a great opportunity for the same reasons, you know, somebody who's got a real life, right? and can't take the time to uproot and, you know, go do a residential program can get a great experience that way.
All these incredible options that were never there for me when I was going through. We just didn't have them. We just didn't have them. It wasn't sophisticated. I keep on telling Melanie and her cohort, I'm so excited for them because this is one of the most exciting times of the field I've ever seen. This is incredible. And it's going to be dependent on what they're able to accomplish and how they're able to drive the market will dictate what we do on the academic side to try to meet those demands.
I think they've got so much potential, and there's so much that we just need to get out of our own way and not be afraid of the, well, I didn't do that, so it must be, it's not necessary.
Right.
Right. We have to be open-minded to say, well, they know a bunch of stuff and they have a bunch of opportunities we never had. And that's a good thing. Right. That's not a, we shouldn't be afraid of that. We should be excited about that.
Right. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Yep. Well, as we get to the end here, my mom had trouble finding the episode. So she's listening right now. And I want to go back. Yeah. Everybody. Hi, Mom. And hi, everybody. Just want to give a shout out to Heidi Yellen. She's listening in California. She's probably sitting in her nice solarium looking over the pool. And we wish her all the best.
She wants to go back and just start over. And
yeah, she will. She probably will. Yeah, she loves listening to these shows. So I'm really happy that she learned something about, you know, what we're doing and what we're talking about. That's good.
All right, it is National Athletic Training Month.
Yep.
So I don't want to let you out of here without thanking an athletic trainer, Dr. Sowers. So think about an athletic trainer. You know, if you have to, then you can pick two
Josh
athletic
Yellen.
Trainers that you would like to thank. Melanie, I'm going to ask you
Josh
the same
Yellen.
Question.
Josh Yellen.
Yellen?
I just,
you have to come
oh,
up
no,
with
no, no, no. I was just, did you hear that? Was that, no. Yeah, we'll let Dr. Sowers answer the question first.
All right.
So okay. I get to thank
Josh Yellen.
An athletic trainer or two athletic trainers?
Yep.
Wow, that's a tough. There's too many. I'll go straight to Bob Grams, who was my head athletic trainer at Seattle Pacific University. Had an internship program at the time that they were transitioning away, and he and I drank a lot of coffee sitting around talking about athletic training, and he opted not to pursue an accredited program because he recognized didn't have the resources and wouldn't have the institutional commitment, and it was a great lesson in recognizing your own limitations. And he was one of the few programs that didn't, you know, take us to 367 entry-level master's programs because said, you know what, I'm not going to convert my internship. But a tremendous mentor got me into grad school and basically shaped my whole career in athletic training. So a big shout out to Bob Grams.
All right. Thanks, Bob Grams, for setting up us up with Dr. Sowers. All right, Melanie.
I would say last time I said three, and I would stick with the same three, Dr. Yellen, Dr. Knobloch. As my cohort is panicking about taking the board, they're just saying, it's okay, you guys will do great. And the other athletic trainer is John Houston with UH Men's Basketball. I've been with him the whole entire year, and he has taught me to become independent and do my own philosophy or start a foundation of my own philosophy of becoming an athletic trainer for collegiate settings. So. Mm-hmm.
I would say Bob Marley is one of them. Before the times that I've been on it before, I've talked about those people that influenced me along the way throughout my career. I would say Bob Marley, from the time that I arrived in Houston, he's always, had a hand extended, ready and willing to help. I call Bob, he is the group of people that I classify as a hummingbird. He's constantly moving on the go. I have no idea how he does it, but he does. And he's one of the most well-respected athletic trainers that I've ever come across. I call him Yoda because he knows all. And then Dr. Kirk Brown, UNC Wilmington. When I was a young faculty member at Southeastern Louisiana University, I had a nice conversation with Kirk when I was attending a student CETA, and he took probably a year and a half. He probably took an hour and a half out of his time and convinced me to go back and get my doctoral degree because he said that I had too many questions and too many thoughts that this is something I needed to do. So that was one of the influencers that I had that helped me get to where I am now. So Bob Marley, Kirk Brown, thank you.
All right, and then mine, Bubba Wilson. He's been on the podcast a lot. He's an athletic trainer here. He's done a lot of different jobs as an athletic trainer, but he's also somebody that I can call if I need something, so if I want to talk or if I need somebody just to talk my ear off. But he's a really good guy. I enjoy being around him. So, Bubba, I appreciate it. I know you'll be on the podcast plenty more. So thanks for befriending me and helping me out with athletic training. And then also, this is my call to action. So just looking at the recent numbers for the podcast, it's over 200,000. It's over 201,000 now, total downloads. But the foreign downloads, the ones outside of the continental U.S., are, I know the ones for the U.K. were over 13,000. Hmm. So it's not just an accident, right? And so what I'm looking for is anyone that is listening outside of the U.S. to contact me. So go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There's a way to contact me. So anyone that's outside of the U.S. listening, I want to get in touch with you. if nothing else, to say thank you, but maybe have you on as one of the listener spotlights, or maybe you have an expertise there. So if you're outside of the U.S., please contact me. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/DAT. Dr. Sowers, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how are they going to do that?
They can email me at esaurs@atsu.edu, or they can follow me on Twitter at Eric L. Sowers.
All right, and be careful with the autocorrect. It likes to change Sowers to Sanders or S-O-U-R-S, yeah. So make sure you get the correct spelling of Sowers there, as I think I've done that multiple times. Right, Yellen? All right, Josh Yellen. University of Houston, Masters of Athletic Training.
Master
program.
Of Athletic Training. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me, jbyellen, J-B-Y-E-L-L-E-N, at central.uh.edu. Or look us up on our Facebook page, or you can get us on our website, www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT.
And then we just recently talked with Chris Butler, a sports PT, and TheraBand, a Kramer company, is sponsoring giveaways for May 19th to June 2nd. So if you want to enter to win a various assortment of TheraBands, then make sure you check that out. Again, go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com and you'll be able to find it close to this one. So Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast, Dr. Eric Sowers, AT Stills, Melanie Kwok, about to pass their BOC, and Dr. Josh Yellen, University of Masters Athletic Training at U of H. That is a wrap.
That's a wrap. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, man. Talk to you soon.